Welcome back to the Mel Kay Show. The man that keeps me sane with his weekly columns, Monday and Friday, is back with us. James Howard Kunstler, how you doing?
Not too bad for an elderly gentleman.
Oh, please. Now, you put out a lot of content recently that's really just aiming at what is really going on in this country. We just had Trump do really well in the primaries. Not a surprise. A lot of the cases are falling apart. These people seem to be endangered animals that have taken over our country. Your thoughts today?
Whoa. My thoughts turn to Victoria Nuland. And I think the most interesting thing that I've heard over the last day or so since Victoria Nuland resigned is that I heard a rumor that the Department of Defense conducted its first audit on the money that has gone into Ukraine, the first actual serious audit, and that may be the reason that Victoria Nuland has jumped ship. So
that would make sense.
Otherwise, maybe she's just sick of destabilizing the world and destroying NATO and probably overthrowing several European governments and destroying Ukraine and destroying the reputation of the United States as a credible partner in international affairs.
Yes.
So who knows? Maybe she just got sick of that and she's gone.
Well, I figure she'll probably go over to some NGO or think tank or something. She's certainly involved at National Endowment for Democracy, which is also a partner in color revolutions all over the world. What is interesting is watching all of the persecutions of Donald Trump one after another kind of implode in real time, and then watching the architects of these, honestly, these are the same people that were involved in Crossfire Hurricane, in the Mueller report, Weissmann, obviously, in both impeachments, in the Transition Integrity Project. They put themselves back in there. They invested a lot. They're writing the briefs. Nobody thinks Fannie Willis or the girl in Georgia Letitia James.
Letitia James.
Or Alvin Bragg or even Jack Smith are writing all of this. It's still coming from the same Get Trump team that can't seem to pull it off. So what are your thoughts on the lawfare aspect of this multi-layered attack on America?
Well, American politics have become so unbelievably absurd. And I think the marvelous thing is, why did they pick these particular surrogates to stand in for them?
Right.
You know, why did Weissmann and Norm Eisen and all of these lawfare guys pick the likes of Fannie Willis and Letitia James? I'm sorry to say this, maybe I'll feel sorry to say this, but it's really starting to look like an Amos and Andy show out there. It's that ludicrous.
Yeah.
And, it looks like Fannie Willis is probably going to be dumped not only as the prosecutor in this Trump case, but as the district attorney, may even lose her law license if the bar comes down on her. And, that's going to be pretty embarrassing for the woke left. Letitia James is, I just don't know how it's possible that we elected this person twice in the state of New York. It's just unbelievable. And somehow we got to get George Soros and his kid Alex out of politics. And,
right,
maybe that will be one of the things that that a Trump administration or maybe a Bobby Kennedy administration can do.
That I love that, honestly, I wish Trump was doing more, that Bobby Kennedy is doing, is actually naming names of who is really, the danger to our country within. We have, I call them the parent company of the United States, and we're just lucky they let us live here. But the parent company is not doing well. And it is having a lot of problems. And one thing you brought up with Eisen and Weissman and McCord and all these people is that they actually were the people that were involved in Now We Know. I'm not sure, and I'd like your take on the New York Times article, but these are the same people that were involved between 2016 and 2020, what some people would call treason and sedition on a sitting president. They were spying on him the whole time. You and I have discussed before the warrantless 702. Well, that's how they got away with it. And then they extended it while he was still while he was in office without him knowing. But a lot of this has to do with what I consider, I know you've talked about it too, this post-Patriot Act fourth branch of the government that is this intel branch that has no oversight and seems to have captured all the rest of them. And people wonder all the time, well, why do they all vote in lockstep, left and right, the uniparty? Why are they so controlled? I would say that they're all being surveilled as well. I think the big brother aspect of our country that has become the all-powerful Oz here has to be exposed and dismantled. And that should be one of the main talking points is dismantling the surveillance police state that they've created around us, you know, for our own good.
Yeah. And I think you've named the cast of characters very well. I find that myself and just about every intelligent commentator, blogger that I know personally really is quite confounded about who exactly is behind all this. And really the only conclusion you can draw is that it appears that the CIA is running the USA. Yeah. There doesn't seem to be any other credible explanation for what's going on.
Yeah.
And you know, by the way, that crew that you mentioned, you know, Mary McCord and Norm Eisen and Weissman and Mark Elias, et cetera, et cetera, yeah. They've been behind every hoax since 2015. Right. Every single one of them.
Right.
You know, not just Russiagate and Mueller thing, but the, you know, the Ukrainian impeachment hoax nonsense and the January 6th hoax.
Yeah, it's pretty extraordinary. And the other thing, another one of these characters that comes out of the Obama cast is I've dug into this. The person that's writing all of the legislation to open the border and they want to do it permanently. So a lot of this is you know, Harvard Law, you know, voodoo over there is Cass Sunstein. So he re-enters behind Mayorkas. He's the counsel that is writing all of the rewriting all of the legislation about asylum seekers and you know, making everything kind of permanent. So it does appear that they're doing a lot of things. I'm sure you saw last week in that bill, they put in a little clause in there that, you know, that the money's going to continue into Ukraine till 2025, no matter who is president. So it does appear that this entire team, a lot of them out of Harvard Law, which is not a surprise at this point, including Obama. But we have to understand that they're using lawfare, not just on Donald Trump, but on the entire nation and to kind of make this permanent situation that it can't be undone. And the people have to understand that it's not coming out of Washington. Washington is not going to save us. And people have to be more active. You've talked about it the whole time, local action.
Yeah, but I think that that's the trend anyway. I think that's the macro trend that, you know, we're going to decentralize anybody who thinks that the WEF scheme for, you know, world government and just centralized top-down control of anything is really missing the macro trend, which is for things to get local and things to get smaller and downscaled and for all of our activities to be more distributed. Because that's really, that's how things are going in a world that is essentially, at least in Western civ, deindustrializing.
Yeah,
and
yep.
You know, we're really not entering that fantasy alt Green New Deal economy that so many people are hoping and wishing for and counting on.
Yeah, you
know, one of the things that really amuses me is that in all of the chatter about AI and transhumanism and central bank digital currencies, nobody ever talks about how all of these things depend on a reliable electric grid. You know, it's laughable. You know,
yeah.
the electric grid is, you know, arguably the largest machine in the world, at least the, you know, the U.S. electric grid. And it's very fragile. It's, you know, it, we have to spend an enormous amount of money just to keep it from falling apart. And if we really wanted to make it robust, it would probably take trillions of dollars to do that. And we don't want to make that investment. And in the meantime, you know, we're indulging in all these imaginings about a digital world that, you know, is just, you just plug your stuff in and, you know, everything's going to work fine. You know, your Bitcoin wallet will be just right there waiting for you. Well, what happens, you know, if the power goes out for 3 days and people can't get to their Bitcoin wallets for 3 days? That'll wreck Bitcoin. By the way, Bitcoin's up about $5,000 this morning, just, you know,
one, I saw gold
just
too.
1 3-hour period. What?
Right. And we saw all of these billionaires are cashing out of the stock market, and everyone's like thinking that this is on a rally, and people are very excited that aren't those billionaires that are holding up the stock market, around $11 billion between Zuckerberg, Bezos, Buffett, the Walton family, all divesting from the stock market, and people are not even seeing this. And then they're telling us the economy's great. You know, something else I wanted to talk to you about. You have a new book out about when you were a kid, growing up in New York and a young man. And I wanted to touch on that because there's a real issue here. We're seeing more and more talked about and more being exposed, but they're having a horrible time, obviously, recruiting people into the military. People aren't being raised to have pride and want to fight for our country. And why would they with this current military? We had the whole thing last week with the AI from Google, where like they're erased white people and they think it's fine. and now we have communists marching around in Brooklyn and in other cities. All young men, young white men, so a lot of them. So, you know, it's really interesting. So in your book, you kind of talk about there was a revolutionary period when you were that age that you're writing about. And now we're in this situation.
Yeah, that was a book called Young Man Blues. And it was about the difficulties I had, you know, getting through adolescence and just becoming an autonomous adult.
Right.
That is, you know, a grown up who can take care of himself and can navigate successfully through the tribulations that everybody goes through. Because you know what? Life is difficult for everybody.
Right.
But, you know, looking back on it, the time that I grew up, the late 1960s and early 70s was a, you know, it was all in all a much easier time than it is now for young men, because not only is the economy very poor, for their prospects for some kind of purposeful employment is so poor, and for making a life that's meaningful, their prospects are so poor, and they're being dumped on by absolutely every institution in our culture.
Right.
You know, trying to reduce them to, you know, trying to turn them into girls or act like girls or you know, just comply with anything people tell them to do. And so they're pretty disordered. You know, whatever they're going through is every bit as bad, maybe worse than, you know, Trump derangement.
Yeah.
It's a kind of developmental derangement. And, you know, I think young women are having a very hard time of it, too, because many of the things that really animate the life of a female are, you know, they're being deprived of.
And the one thing, too, that you're bringing up, it's important to understand, is all of the DEI stuff. There have been so many, so much exposed in all industries, but certainly the corporations. And, you know, I know a lot of my friends have kids that are of college internship age. And literally it says, like, basically white males, no need to apply,
yeah.
You know, and a lot of jobs are that way, too. And this is coming from above. And it's like, what do they think, that if they have a whole generation that needs universal basic income, is that the goal, that we don't even have the money to pay for? I mean, people really have to go inside, I think, and take back, you know, what you're talking about, which is find their purpose and their meaning. And all they're being told is everything is outside themselves. Everything is, you know, even these people that demand their pronouns be said, like, why do you care? Like, I don't know. When I grew up, it was, you were supposed to find your worth, your purpose, your direction inside. This has become a situation where they're telling young people it's all outside, and it's about changing other people to align with you rather than, you know, working on yourself to not care and go on your own path. It's as if they don't want people to find their own path.
Yeah, well, the wonder is that so many people believe that, and so many people are swallowing, you know, left woke ideology. I think we're getting to a point where the directives that are being issued from Mao Zedong Central are so preposterous and so damaging to the people who are following them that the whole thing's going to flip one way or another. And a society can only sustain so much insane behavior, you know, stuff that is at odds with reality. And sooner or later, you know, you discover that reality has plans of its own for you.
Yeah.
And, you know, you got to sort of figure out what they are.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the other part of all of this is that we have a wide open border, and there's a whole bunch of people out there that act like that's not real. And it's very disturbing. I don't know if you saw that clip already of the intel operatives known as Jen Psaki and Rachel Maddow laughing that the exit polls of Virginia, the top thing that was of concern to people was immigration. And they're laughing and saying that's such a, like it's a joke. And then you hear all these commentators on the left, you know, talk about, well, these people just want a better life. They're just coming. And we both know that's not true. But it's amazing how many people don't fully understand that the open border is purposeful. I keep hearing people saying it's incompetence. It's not, it can't possibly be incompetence at this point.
No, it's demonstrably not. In fact, you know, reporters who are out there in the trenches, like Michael Yon and the Darien Gap, you know, they are showing us exactly who's behind this. You know, there are nonprofits with names, you know, that are affiliated often with, you know, Catholic or Jewish religious organizations that are receiving one way or another money funneled from the U.S. government, often through the U.N., to the NGOs, right, to set up camps, to provide transportation, to pay for all of the logistical support to get these people from point A to point B, and then to, you know, to shovel them across the border. And, you know, it may be a fact that these people are leaving a certain place for a better life. I mean, if I was in a mental hospital in Venezuela, I'd be very happy to be able to get to Texas and just roam around on my own and do what I want to do.
Yeah. And, you know, you brought up before briefly, and this is another thing that I'm glad RFK is out there talking about, which is the CIA and the truth about it and what's been going on. Because I just had on Michael Yon, and we were talking about how after the Vietnam War, literally right before you, after the Vietnam War, a lot of people don't know that a lot of like the commandos and the black ops, they were going to Panama and training down there. And of course, most people know about Air America, Nicaragua, all this other stuff. But just the other day, and it was a Russia hoax reporter that the New York Times chose. But oddly enough, the New York Times, of all places, puts out a expose with a chosen reporter, obviously, that was allowed to go to all 12 CIA bases that were apparently set up around 2009 to 2014 before the Newland, McCain, Obama, you know, color revolution in Ukraine. And it put a spotlight on the CIA. And then there's also a Netflix documentary out right now about the octopus and that a bunch of different people were exposing the actual deep state many, many years ago. So and pointing that also is pointing to the CIA. It appears that the CIA is coming out from behind the shadows with in a PR campaign. This isn't happening by accident. What do you make of the sudden sunlight being shined on the CIA?
Well, I read a very interesting piece this morning by a blogger on Substack named Donald Jeffries, and he referred to it, I thought, pretty intelligently as that New York Times story was a Dear John letter to Ukraine. You know,
yeah, that's a good.
Sorry, but we're breaking up.
Right.
And,
exactly.
You know, we're going to kind of do it in a sideways manner, but we're breaking up. It's over. The project hasn't worked out. And, you know, it's just getting embarrassing. So we got to peel.
Yeah. I mean, maybe
that's what
maybe
I think
not.
It was.
Yeah. And then Newland on top of that, if you put it that way, then Newland, the orchestrator of all this time, you know, that does seem that way. I mean, but we really have to go into this because just last week, Schellenberger and Tabibi and other people exposed things that you and I have been talking about for a long time, that it was actually John Brennan under the, when he was running the CIA, that went out there and 6 months, 8 months, maybe a year before Crossfire Hurricane was actually announced to us, had CIA operatives working with the Five Eyes nations to bump, you know, people to then create the illusion that they were having relationships with different Russians so then they could then kick off Crossfire Hurricane. So there's been a lot of pointing at the CIA lately. And as you know, and I know, that was a JFK big thing where he was calling out the CIA and blow it into 1,000 pieces. Maybe their time has come, maybe not. But we do really, somebody somewhere thinks it's a good PR strategy to put the spotlight on them at the moment. We are right now in $34 trillion worth of debt. We have geopolitical chaos everywhere. The central bank digital currency is looming. The BRICS nations have expanded beyond Saudi Arabia and continue to expand. And all I know is that many experts keep telling me that gold and silver is the best way to hedge against inflation and to protect your savings going forward. Did you know you can convert your 401k and IRA into physical gold and silver today? It can be shipped direct to your door or stored in a secure location. So go to our partners page at themelkayshow.com, fill out the form, and someone from Beverly Hills Precious Metals will get in touch with you right away to help you figure out the best course for you and your family ahead. Stay secure, stay safe, and prepare now.
Yeah, something seems to be roiling below the surface of the CIA. And, you know, one of the things we might consider is there actually may be people who work for the government who are really sick and tired of being party to continuous treason and sedition. Yeah. I mean, maybe there are a few of them, and maybe they're, you know, making some moves and making some noises or something. And of course, there's the prospect that Donald Trump might get reelected, actually, could happen if they don't butt him off, or, you know, something other untoward, if his plane doesn't go down, if something untoward happens. And they must be getting a little nervous because an awful lot of them might go to prison.
Yeah.
Hard to tell.
I mean, but that has to be also, well, I've been saying about, especially about the Lawfare gang that we've called out a couple times on the show. I keep saying there's a big part of them that is probably doing what they're doing still for self-preservation, because to see them lose their minds over the 9-0 decision of the Supreme Court, and then the immunity situation is coming up, and then they're all like, well, the immunity will save us. I have a feeling from the 9-0 in Colorado, it's going to be 9-0 on immunity too. How can they change that every president from here on makes decisions? And again, this has to do with the fourth branch of government controlling the presidency, basically, and the parent company of America. It's like, if they take away immunity, then what's the president anyway from this point on?
Yeah, I see that going similarly, although probably a split decision.
Yeah. Did you see the Atlantic? What was your interesting? Not that I care about what crazy people like Keith Olbermann say, but what was interesting is after the 9-0, first Keith Olbermann calls the three female justices whores. And then The Atlantic puts out, and Lorraine Powell Jobs, doing her best over at The Atlantic to do her part, puts out that Ketanji Jackson is the face of white supremacy. And then somebody, one of the young surrogates, I don't know if it was Hogg or somebody else, then started saying that it was all, Clarence Thomas's fault. So the attacks on the Supreme Court are self-serving and all, but, you know, pretty exposing that they don't care about anyone. They just care about power and winning. And if they don't win, they'll take down their own.
Well, you know, Mel, being insane is kind of a full-time job. And it's actually one of those jobs that people get sick of.
Right.
You know, you've had jobs like that, haven't you?
Yes, I have.
Got sick of, you know, you just don't want to do them anymore. It's too takes too much out of you.
Yeah.
Too tiresome.
Yeah.
It's insulting. You know, so I think that what we're seeing is that the left is getting just weary of being insane. It's just taken too much out of them to be that crazy.
Yeah.
And to look that foolish. You know, to these stunts are pranks that they're playing, like the Colorado, you know, decision to keep Trump off the ballot are so dumb. You know, putting people like Fannie Willis in charge of this enormous prosecution, it looks so dumb. Don't they even have, can't they even hire a private detective and find out if she's okay, you know, if she's clean, you know? But they don't do that. So, you know, you just got to conclude that these people are have lost their minds.
Yeah.
And by the way, you know, as an American Jew, I'm very embarrassed by people like Mark Elias and Norm Eisen and Michael Sussman and the rest of the Lawfare gang. You know, I've been trying to work on a comedy routine, and one of the gags I think I'm going to do is. You know, Mark Elias and Michael Sussman and Andrew Weissman and all, the rest of the gang all go up to heaven, you know, and they re-encounter their dead moms up there, and their moms say, their moms all say, why couldn't you be a doctor?
Yeah, really. I mean, that is a problem. I was talking to Roseanne about it, too, who was saying the same thing. And you know, and on top of that, the other part is who are they working for? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, because the real question is, why are they sacrificing everything? I used to call Norm Eisen the Wile E. Coyote to Trump's Roadrunner. It's so embarrassing. He gets so close and then he loses again. And it's been like 8 years of this. I'm always like, meet me.
Yeah. And then this stinks. And then he makes some idiotic pronouncement on Twitter or MSNBC. X, you know,
to embarrass himself further. Yeah, well, they
gave Weissman a show. Yeah. Oh, man.
I mean, you know, this is.
But it's embarrassing, you know, and it's actually, I think it's prompting, it's has a lot to do with the return of anti-Semitism in America.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we have to look at that. The hard part, I mean, you read Whitney Webb's books, One Nation Under Blackmail, and that's another thing. When I see some of these people, especially the really unhinged celebrities like Reiner and Colbert and Oberman, the first thing I think is, what do they have on them that they cannot allow, you know, the people that they have in power that they support lose power. This is something to do with power. Then I saw the New York Magazine wrote a thing about in the Intelligencer about the Clintons coming back. And I'm thinking, what? They think we're so stupid. It's going on.
It's just hard to understand how somebody like Rob Reiner, who once long, long ago made a couple of good movies, you know, how he could become so unhinged. And Colbert is just embarrassing himself on TV. You know, It's hard to watch these guys.
Yeah. Can you imagine too? I mean, what the self-worth that he, I mean, so then there's this other thing you can, the anti-Semitism thing is a little easier to understand than I don't really understand what this Christian nationalist thing is. I don't get it. It doesn't seem real to me. Rob Reiner just
isn't real
about it. Like, so to me, it's like, why are they, but they're really, really trying. What is that? What do you see when you see that storyline?
I just see it as another module of their, you know, in the procession, this cavalcade of insane pranks that they're pulling. It's just the latest one.
Did you see the rural white
oh yeah, rural white rage? Yeah.
They don't even know anyone in rural America. These
exactly
Ivy League guys writing these books.
And in fact, you know, it's weird. I live in a pretty rural county of upstate New York, and it's amazing how many wokesters there are up here in the thickets. Yeah. You know, this county is full of, you know, crazy woke people. And Vermont just, you know, basically voted to, you know, for Nikki Haley over Donald Trump. Just
who knew that they were so into war, endless wars. Yeah. They're neocons over there in Vermont, I guess.
Well, they're all insane over there. You know, we're 10 miles from the border. And, you know, it makes me a little bit uneasy to have them next door.
Well, have you seen, speaking of where you live, have you seen this war on Amos Miller, the Amish farmer? They're trying to destroy this Amish farmer of all the people that are, you know, peaceful, leave them alone. It's this guy. And I was talking to Robert Barnes, who's the lawyer that is helping this guy. And it's like everything that the Amish stand for is everything opposite of Bill Gates and the World Economic Forum. So the attack on the Amish farmer, we were talking yesterday that, you know, it's actually an attack on all different fronts of freedom.
Yeah, we actually have a lot of Amish who moved into my neighborhood just in the last 4 years. And it's pretty amazing to see them operate. I'm thinking of a business opportunity for, you know, when after the country collapses, which it seems to be doing very efficiently. I want to start an Amish skill school.
You should. You know, that's an excellent idea. I was talking about it yesterday. We all need to learn from the Amish.
Yeah, you know, like how to harness a horse.
Right.
You know, how to do your laundry without a machine. You know, how to cook on a wood stove.
You know, I was talking yesterday. They all educate their children themselves. They then educate them how to do different skills, carpentry, you know, everything like that. You know, and when you talk about the long emergency and all of that, you know, we do need those skills, and people don't have them. They don't have any skills at this point at all. People don't even know how to write cursive or spell
or cook their own dinner.
Or spell, yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
It's just amazing, you know, that people are complaining about food prices and they're all doing DoorDash.
Yeah, did you see the Obama? I don't know who is running. It's got to be like some 26-year-old people in the Alphabet Club that are writing the Biden White House Twitter. But they wrote something about like Uber Eats or like you said, DoorDash being, you know, too expensive. And I'm thinking, is that that's what we've come to, that the president of the United States is tweeting out about DoorDash gouging prices? Like, how many people are at this point ordering food DoorDash that it's a national emergency?
Actually, I think the part of the problem is that people, many, many people who shouldn't be doing that are still ordering takeout with, what is it, a 25% surcharge for having it delivered to your door or something like that.
Well, if you look at the credit card debt, maybe that is what it is.
Yeah, I know somebody personally, the son of somebody I know who does that, who is in no position to be able to afford it, and yet they persist in doing it. So, you know, there are strange hangover habits that are just persist in a culture. One of the things that's impressed me over my career is this thing about the persistence of culture. You know, that once people start doing things, they can't undo things very easily, and it gets us into a lot of trouble.
Yeah, but I think that's the inevitable outcome of where we're headed. I mean, it's funny, you know, with everything that's happening in their entire house of cards, at least on the lawfare front, on the border front, on the voting front, on all of that, it makes these people that are losing power very dangerous, in my opinion. But at the same time, mm-hmm. it does appear that I honestly believe that by the summer, most people, left of center, right of center, probably 30% on each side, are all going to have had it with all of them. Like, I just really feel like, you know, we're in a place where, you know, as George Washington warned, where left and right, Republican and Democrat, are, you can't really see either side. And if you do pick a side, you don't even recognize it anymore. I really think that there's like a people's movement. We're stuck with this situation now. But I feel like because of everything coming from all sides and this loss of lifestyle, quality of life is really what's like when you're talking about culture and the persistence of culture, the quality of life is equally bad, I feel like, for everyone, no matter where you fit in this puzzle.
And that's part of the deviltry of inflation, yeah. is that, you know, it smacks a whole nation down. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, what are you working on these days? You got, you're always prolifically working on stuff. Are you, I always hope for you to be heading back into, I hope that there will be a revive of theater or of film or whatever. But what are you working on? Because you're always working on something. You're also an artist and
a painter. Oddly enough, I'm writing a novel because talking about the persistence of culture, that's what I did for most of my professional career.
Yeah.
And I have one project that I would like to do before I move to another plane of existence. So I'm writing a novel about a 12-year-old kid in New York City during the week after the Kennedy assassination.
Oh, wow. Great. I just recently rewatched the entire Mad Men. and it takes you through from the beginning to the end, to then Bobby being, and it really shows you that period of time is so fascinating to look at. First of all, life was much, it looks way better in my opinion, but at the same time, you know, there were so many, these were a lot of people that I've talked to about this. These were real trauma incidents, like the trauma that
I don't think you can overstate, you can't overstate how damaging both the Kennedy assassinations were to this country. And I felt it personally. I still remember exactly where I was. I was in Bloomingdale's.
Wow. You know, 59th Street, the old flagship.
When he got shot, for some reason, I think we had parent teacher conferences that day or something that got us out of school. And I was out of school. And I was in Bloomingdale's. I was 13, I guess, or so. 14, 15, I don't know, buying socks. And I went out onto 60th Street and I saw all these people marching around with transistor radios up to their ears.
Yeah.
And, you know, I went into an art supply store nearby and across the street, and they had the radio on and, you know, where you could hear it. And I discovered what happened. And I walked back up Lexington Avenue, you know, uptown, back towards home. And, you know, past all these people weeping on Lexington Avenue. It was really a stunning thing. And then, of course, that whole miserable weekend of, you know, Jack Ruby and Lee Harvey Oswald and the funeral cortege and the, you know, the parade behind the casket on Pennsylvania Avenue. It was made quite an impression on me.
Yeah, I think it made quite an impression on everyone. In a lot of my speeches, I talk about that day in 1963 was the day that America was captured, and that there's been one cover up after the other, you know, and it's interesting that you're writing that, because what I noticed watching it through the storyline of Mad Men was that right when people started to kind of get their equilibrium back, Bobby got killed. Yeah. And it was like you saw these people kind of just through that story, because obviously Wiener, the guy that's the creator of that show, obviously was very moved and changed by it as well. But, you know, that also takes us back to the idea of like trauma programming and all of that. If what we believe about the whole Kennedy assassination, what I believe to be much closer, which is Jim Garrison and Fletcher Prouty's take on what happened there, then for me, it's like, this has been nonstop trauma programming one after the other since that happened to kind of, and again, this is what goes back to the deep state or the senior executive service or the people that never leave government, that there was an article, Crane, I know you know Alex Craner too. Alex Craner had a Substack where he was writing how Liz Truss, after she was prime minister, and also a story about George W. Bush after he was kind of saying, well, until you get there, you don't realize that the people in charge, the president and prime minister, really have no power. And this all goes back, I think, to the JFK situation and kind of that it was never resolved and that we were thrown by the Dulles brothers, who were probably involved on a massive scale. We were told to just move on. And I'm glad you're revisiting it, because it wasn't until I rewatched Mad Men, which was in the last 2 months, that I saw through the eyes of those characters, how much it changed everyone. And then they wouldn't let them heal. Still to this day, I feel like it's still a wound that is never healed and has just continually been put a Band-Aid on. And then for reasons of national security, we move to the next thing. So I'm very looking forward to reading that. We will go from there. Now, anything to say? You had a great column on Monday. Are you percolating on Friday? How do you do that? Do you wait?
I just percolate. Yeah, I percolate, and then I get up at 5 o'clock in the morning on Friday and do another one on Friday. And that's how, like I said before, for me, it's like composing chamber music, you know, on a deadline. One thing I do want to leave you with, I think that there are kind of two dynamics going on here. One is that it's really possible that this madness that we're immersed in America is going to come to an end the same way that the Jacobins came to an end in Paris,
right,
in 1794, which was that, you know, they kept on doing their thing and making France crazier and crazier and crazier. And then one day, Robespierre gets up and goes to the rostrum of the national convention, and they start throwing vegetables at him.
Right.
And, you know, 36 hours later, he goes to the guillotine.
Right.
You know, and I think that it's that will probably that or that could happen very suddenly. And the other thing is that that there's enough momentum in the world now and in the dynamics of the American economy to probably collapse a lot of the systems that we're depending on and to kind of force the issue of where this is going and force the issue of whether or not this strange crypto semi-psychotic oligarchy is going to be able to continue working its hoodoo on the Western Civ.
Yeah.
So I think two ways they might be going down.
Yeah, I mean, I really do see that what you're saying too. It really does feel French revolutionary.
Yeah.
Right now, you can't really deny it. And again, the people that we've pointed to, the big question is always why, you know, who are they working for? That this is
it
not-
is confounding. Like we started talking about a half an hour ago.
Yeah.
None of the people I know can figure out why this is happening and who is behind it. It's almost as though, you know, the world itself or Western Civ itself has some kind of a death wish.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the good people that that don't will continue to push forward. I mean, I would love to see, honestly, RFK and Trump team up. I know that they both said that they wouldn't, but they could take two very different jobs, and one could dismantle the intel blob and the fifth column, and the other one can rebuild our economy and our inner strength and end the wars. I think that would be ideal. I know people don't like to hear that, but I still have in my heart, I just hope that some point they could sit down and figure out how to divide the mission. I think that would be a great thing for us. But
I think that's a really important idea, and I'm on board with that. Yep.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think they have two very important things to do, and they've laid out what they need to do, and we actually need both. So thank you so much. James Howard Kunstler, Kunstler.com. Head over there. If you are not already subscribed, please subscribe to him, his newsletter, his Substack, everything. I look forward to it. It's the first thing I read on Monday and the last thing I read on Friday. And it it always keeps me going because you really do, though it's witty and fun and funny. You kind of break down everything that you need to know in a way that's digestible and also doesn't make you totally crazy and upset. So I really appreciate your work, and thank you so much for joining me again.
I appreciate your work, and thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. I'll see you again. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye, Mel.
It's that time of year again. People are getting sick. They're getting the flu. They're getting the cold. They're getting all different kinds of things. And I have always been very grateful for my friendship with Dr. Zelenko, Dr. Z. And though he's not with us anymore and I miss him every day, he has left behind the best remedy to me for anything that ails you. And that is Z-Stack from Dr. Zelenko. There's Z-Flu, Z-Stack, and Z-Kids. There's also many other products there. It's all about naturally boosting your immune health and fighting anything that comes your way. Dr. Zelenko is ahead of his time. He is out there fighting for us still to this day, and he's left behind the best gift. The gift is your health. So go to MelKDrZ.com, or you can go to my partner's page at themelkshow.com, click Dr. Z or Z-Stack. Better health for us all awaits. Thank you, Dr. Zelenko. Did you know that there are more than 60,000 known chemicals in tap water, and the EPA only tests for 91 of them? This is why we're so grateful that we partnered with Healthy Hydration. They offer whole home water filtration, shower filters, under-the-counter pre-filters, molecular hydrogen water machines, hydrogen water bottles, and so much more for a healthier home and family. So go to themelkshow.com and click on our partners page and check out Healthy Hydration and everything they have in store for your health and wellness today.